You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Dana and Jay.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growling, Paul Eitner Jr. and Jay Morrison, presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. And we're live, working for you. It's good to be back in the live room. Super Bowl preview live room, Jay. Here we go. Just the show just keeps on rolling.
It sure does. It's February. I'm at the Senior Bowl like normal this time of year, but there's two Bengals bowl games of concern this month.
Yeah, you're living the lovely Mobile, Alabama life, and checking in down there as the Bengals, look at the next round of trying to build this roster. Meanwhile, trying to win a Super Bowl right now. So it kind of keeps going. Jay, I'm just hopeful that you'll actually make it back. Or if you're going to have to perform some sort of, figure skating on your way back up to Cincinnati tomorrow.
My flight is supposed to leave tomorrow morning. I'm currently in the works of trying to get out tonight. So fingers crossed. I think I can get to CBG by midnight tonight and miss the ice.
Yeah, you do not want any part of that. Travel tomorrow does not look any fun for anybody. But let's not talk about ice, and let's not talk about bad weather. Let's talk about the sun of Los Angeles, California, and Super Bowl 56, Bengals Rams lined up. And we are here. We're going to be talking about it forever here over the next couple of weeks. We head out to LA early next week. The team is still here today. They're going through all their sort of NBC productions, interviews. They're trying to knock all that stuff out right now. I think you're going to see we still don't really know. I think they're all kind of flying by the seat of their pants there inside Paul Brown Stadium right now, trying to get the logistics knocked out, like a lot of us covering the team are too. But so we don't really know exactly what the schedule is still for the next couple of days, but we do know the team will do probably some media availability and an easy practice on Monday here in Cincinnati. Tuesday, which is normally the player off day, will be their travel day. They will fly out to Los Angeles, land out there, and go through their normal week of practice in LA at UCLA. And so they'll be there at UCLA practicing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, meetings the night before, game on Sunday. So that's kind of the logistical setup, is that they all try to work through it right now. But, it changes by the second, but really Tuesday on is kind of set.
Yeah, and the big question is tomorrow what their practice will be. If it is an ice storm, it would seem to figure they would go to UC and go in the bubble. Not going to do them any good to go inside the stadium if there's freezing rain or ice or snow, whatever it is. But it is the idea of being in LA for the whole entire week to do the practice has to be appealing, given what the alternative would be to trying to get ready for the biggest games of their careers in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Tuesday trip was just easier just to do when you already have that preset off day.
Yeah,
in there, and I think it just made more sense just to start the week here and then get out there on that off day. So we that's kind of the setup. Bengals are wearing what they wore in the wild card win, which I thought that was a pretty clever drop of that today, where they brought the old hanger out from their leak of the uniform for to hang it on the B, and so it's black jersey white pants, orange socks. You saw it in the wild card game. You saw it in the game against San Francisco. They are the home team, but they will be in the Chargers locker room, and the Rams will be in the Rams locker room. So that's kind of the home team setup. We'll have a bunch of questions about that type of stuff answered up on the site here later today. For now, if you guys have questions, you can drop them in. A bunch of you already have. We will try to get to as many as we can. This might not be as long a session as normal, as you might imagine. There's quite a lot going on in our world right now. That's why this thing's at 3:30 today, because it's about where we could fit it in. So let's get to some questions here and see what we've got. Let's start right here at the top. Let's go and bring Taylor C. up onto the stage. Reminder, when you come up on the stage, you need to unmute yourself. Taylor, are you with me?
I think so. Can you hear me?
There you are. Yeah, yes. Sure can. How are you, Taylor?
I'm doing all right. I appreciate you guys doing this, as always. I wanted to get your opinion on, and maybe it's a little hard to make this prediction, but something we saw against the Chiefs that I think we saw maybe more of than in any other game is the use of the screen game. I counted, I think, 7 screens they tried to run. I think only one of them was to a wide receiver. The one to Boyd got batted down, but P. Ryan saw his fair share. Mixon, unfortunately, more often than not, it was getting thrown into the ground because Burrow was under pressure. Is that something you see them trying to implement against the Rams to try to slow that pass rush?
It's a great question, Taylor. You're right. That was as much screen as they've done all year. They haven't been great at it. And that was kind of the thing I think that made them hesitant to use it so much during the season, was when they had run it, it never really quite seemed to break outside of a few times. They had trouble with timing. And so I think they realized, though, against Kansas City, like they had to try to find a way to get that going. Kansas City had kind of been blown up on that in the past, and they needed to find some way to slow down that pass rush and keep them from just teeing off. And you know, they were lucky. I mean, the one to Mixon that Burrow definitely lobbed up top and Mixon caught with one hand was incredible. And obviously P. Ryan's run was spectacular, and he kind of created something out of nothing there to get in for the touchdown. You've got to do something. I mean, you have to do something like that, whether we're talking about draws or screens or whatever, to try to account for the fact that you just can't block Aaron Donald in a regular situation. You, as many tricks as you have in your bag, you got to think they're going to use them. And I certainly would expect screens to be part of that life again.
Yeah. If you remember, Paul, there was a point in that game. This is where they really missed Stanley Morgan, because he's so good blocking out there on the edge. And there was a point they ran a screen to the left. I can't remember which one it was in that game. And I even audibly said, oh, that's, they've got it. It's set up. And one guy knifes through and blows it up. And we've seen that a lot this year, where it looks like it's set up. The play's drawn up perfectly, and one guy misses the block, and that's the guy that comes through and blows up the screen. But, yes, I draws, screens, jet sweeps, anything they can do to slow down Aaron Donald, the rest of that pass rush has got to be part of the game plan this week or next week.
Yes. Yeah. All right, let's go next and bring Timothy B. up onto the stage. Timothy, how are you doing?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Welcome in.
Well, excited for next week and the travel out to L.A. It's going to be a blast. I had a kind of question about Joe Burrow and kind of media. There was an interesting article today about just how low the Q scores were for these two quarterbacks who were kind of unknown outside the Mannings and Bradys. And I'm just kind of curious. This is Burrow's kind of first, I don't know, foray into a super national environment. And, you know, based on other Cincinnati sports stars, this is going to be the biggest exposure a Cincinnati athlete has had in a huge number of years. How do you think he's going to handle that going forward? He seems like he has a calm, cool demeanor, but this new stage of his career is going to, it's going to show something for what kind of person he is and how he represents the city. Thanks.
Well, yeah, he's going to be very careful about which. I mean, he could have his choice of endorsements at this point, with getting to the Super Bowl this quickly, and he has been on the national stage with the Heisman and the run to the title with LSU, but I don't see him going out and just doing every possible commercial just to make extra money. He's going to be very careful about the products he endorses that kind of fall in line with his beliefs and his values. And it's not going to be anything. I think it'll be, you'll see it in the off season. I don't think he's going to want to be distracted at all in season filming spots and doing that type of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you're going to see Joe Burrow change. Like he's just not that type of guy. And now we know that because really you can't get too much more attention. And it's so different now, today's athlete, how used to the attention they are by the time they reach this level. If you are a guy like Burrow, I mean, the amount of attention he got during his run at LSU and playing in those national championship games and winning the Heisman and seeing what happened with his speech, his Heisman speech, and, you know, and donating the money that all got raised for the Athens food pantry. It really affected him. And he's talked about that, about he has a very unique understanding of his platform for a guy his age. And I just think he understands that. He understands a lot about projecting to the media and what that looks like to his teammates and what that means to leadership. He's just got, you know, he may not be, you know, as famous maybe as the Mannings or the Bradys, but I think that's just because we're only seeing his second run into the national stage. He's still seen a lot of attention in his day, and he has a very unique understanding of how to deal with all of that stuff and how people react to that stuff. And you're just not going to see that change who he is. I mean, he was the number one pick. He came in here, and everybody in the whole building and the whole city is counting on him to be this guy. And he's kind of just been the hardworking, go to work, blue collar, endear yourself to the team guy, and you've seen what it's done. He's got a real natural knack for that stuff not affecting anything. If there's one thing I probably wouldn't worry about with Burrow, it would be any issues that changing who he is from the outside in. I mean, he's just going to be hardworking football guy, and I think he's got a really good feel for that.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's bring in Austin W. up onto the stage next. Austin, how are you doing?
After the success they had in the second half against Patrick Mahomes, do you think they'll take a similar approach on next Sunday with Stafford and all those weapons at receiver?
I mean, it worked. You wonder what Lou has up his sleeve if because they talk about this all the time. You can't stray too far from what you're used to, but you do need to throw in wrinkles. I don't know that the as great as Cooper Kupp and OBJ are. I just don't know that it's that same dynamic with Stafford throwing as opposed to Mahomes. If they get down and they need to do something, maybe they switch to that. But you have to figure the Rams are going to be ready for that. And the Rams don't have a great running game. But if the Bengals start rushing three and going to that same philosophy, you could see them just start pounding Cam Akers and kind of forcing them out of that. It was curious that the Chiefs never did that. But it is. That's part of the fun of this week is trying to guess what the wrinkles are going to be and what the game plan is going to be to stop great offenses and great defenses. You get to this point, it's offenses and defenses that have been hard to be stopped. And so it's really hard to come up with something new that they haven't seen that's going to be effective.
I mean, one thing we talked about in the podcast this week was about how, look, I mean, they have so many versatile pieces. They've stopped two of the most opposite styles of offense in the past 2 weeks, from the hard pound running game of Tennessee to the wide open passing game of Kansas City, and done it in very different ways. And you're going to have an LA team that they are very familiar with. I mean, the system, yes, it's changed. Yes, things evolved. But I mean, a lot of the stuff they brought here is still based in that LA same system that they're running with the Rams. You know, it's still based in wide zone, play action, deep overs, you know, all this stuff. You see the Bengals running, you see the Rams running, and you know, it's not like they'll be unfamiliar with some of the trouble spots that come with it. And, you know, the Rams, what happened to the Rams this year? They started running a ton of empty. I mean, you don't think the Bengals defense is familiar with this. It's like there's so many things in the copycat nature of these two teams that are similar. And so I don't think that they'll come in without a pretty good plan. I don't think it'll look a lot like necessarily what you saw last week against Mahomes. I think that's rare. I think it's rare that you would use something like that, and it's something that you saw in him and in them. I think you have a different plan with the Rams altogether, but I don't think it's one that you would have any concern about not being familiar with or know what to put out there, just because of so much familiarity with this system. Because there's just, it really is a lot of connectivity to the current setup. Let's go to the next one, and we will bring Jack M up on the stage. Jack, how you doing?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Great.
I just have a quick question. So I saw a tweet, I think it was from Ben Baldwin, who I know you guys reference a few times, talking about how two of the four Bengals interceptions this postseason have come off deflections, and how that kind of indicates itself to a little bit of fortune in winning some of these games. So my question is twofold. One, do you agree with the assessment that maybe the Bengals have gotten lucky in getting to where they are? And two, going off of the interceptions, how much of a role does this postseason play in Jesse Bates' negotiation this offseason?
I disagree with that assessment, because, first of all, there's at least three that I can think of that were deflections, and two of them were guys deflecting the ball to themselves, B.J. Hill, and then the Mike Hilton one against Ryan Tannehill. And then the other one was Eli Apple reaching in and making a great play on the deflected interception to Logan Wilson that really kind of gave Evan McPherson the shot at the walk-off field goal there. I could see you, if you say it's good fortune, if balls are deflecting off of receivers' hands and they should have been completions. But those interceptions that the Bengals made on those deflections, they made those plays. I don't think there was anything really fortunate about it. Those were legitimate defensive plays, and it just kind of falls in line with what this defense has been doing the second half of the year, and forcing all these turnovers and really kind of sparking this run, because they played solid. They were a number five run defense all year. It was a solid defense, but they weren't getting turnovers. And now they're getting the turnovers, and it's made all the difference in the world. And Paul, you can either follow up on that, or if you want to tackle the Jesse part of it.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse Bates has you know, there was interesting up and down to his kind of career arc lately, right? I mean, we saw people I know one wants to think back or acknowledge the 2019 season, and Lord knows I don't want to remember it either. But people forget that in the second half of that 2019 season, Jesse Bates really turned it on, and it was probably the first half of the season. He kind of wasn't totally comfortable with the system, this, that, and the other. And then he had a really great run, came back, and all of his next year, last year, was the same way. And then the first half of this season, you see the contract stuff's going on. He's up and down. He's kind of been streaky in some ways in kind of catching these hot streaks. And what you're seeing now is he's really been on one. And I think he's consistent enough, and his high streaks are so high in creating turnovers. You know, his playoff run here has definitely cemented that he will for sure get the franchise tag, which I don't think was ever in doubt. And then I think that you'll see a little bit more of an aggressive push to give him eventually come to an agreement on the deal, whether that be in July or sooner or whatever that is. I mean, the Bengals are going to try to keep this core group together for as long as they can. And Jesse's such a big part of that. I know we had all the conversation about it back before the season, but I think that conversation was still with the idea that they would eventually get something done. And the fact that it got pushed to this offseason was just kind of part of that process. I still think something gets done. I still think he's here long term. I don't think that's changed. I do think it starts with franchise tag. And I do think he's been really the key to their defense, because the turnovers have been the key to them winning, and he's been at the center of so many of them. Let's go to the next one, and I will bring in Matt Age. Matt, how you doing?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing great. Doing great.
Welcome in. Hey. I just wanted to get on my soapbox for just for 1 minute. You can set a timer. You know, back in when camp was starting or in OTAs, I mean, the message that they were getting across is we are a connected team, and we are going to go the extra mile to get our stuff together and be ready to play. And just how awesome is it that this team, now that we're here, we are in the Super Bowl, and I still can't believe I'm saying this. That, you know, when you hear their interviews, that's all they talk about is how much they enjoy being with their teammates and how proud they are of each other. You know, you've got Ja'Marr Chase, the tears streaming down his face because of this, you know, the achievement that they have as a team together. It's just amazing to me now, looking back at it, like how far we've come because of that mantra that the coaches have set at the beginning of the season. And you know, here we are. So anyway, that's what I just wanted to say.
No, I appreciate it, Matt. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And the thing is about that is that every year, and that I've covered football teams, you hear people talk about playing for each other and doing the right things and saying the right things and you know, chemistry in the locker room. And that's it's very much a football player media cliche. And so you're naturally skeptical. And I was naturally skeptical of that storyline throughout the off seasons. I think you have to look for the action. You have to look for the evidence, right? And so things like the team is fighting in Miami and the offensive linemen are sitting on the bench, right? That was a joke and it was hysterical, but it was real. And you have things like, okay, here's this team. Look at the sidelines during these games. Look at the way they all are up. Look at the way they all are so happy for each other. Look at the way when they come into the locker room and the game ball is passed out, how happy they are for the guy getting it. Listen to how little selfishness you hear. Listen to, you know, that's why I wanted to make, I remember in Detroit writing the story about Ja'Marr Chase's block and how much that was really indicative of what you're talking about, that bigger picture of playing for each other, selflessness, caring and dancing together and doing all that stuff. I mean, to me, those are the actions that kind of made me throw away the words. With them all being there at OTAs when they didn't have to be was a real deal that backed up the words. The words are always going to be there. But this team, what's been obvious, even without us being in the locker room, is how much you can see that. And so it didn't feel fake because so many things were actually happening to back it up. And it wasn't them just speaking about culture and locker room and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what's really struck me too, is how when the offense has the ball, the defense is up there watching. And I remember maybe it was the first Kansas City game. I don't know, these all run together, but Mike Hilton saved the Bengals offense a 15-yard penalty because he was doing that. I remember him running on the field and grabbing one of the receivers because the receiver had his helmet ripped off by a player. I think it was a Chiefs player, and Mike Hilton ran out there and kind of wrapped him up. And it's just, it is. I don't think Von Bell's done an interview yet where he hasn't said play for each other over and over again. And Paul's right. You hear that and you kind of roll your eyes. You're like, yeah, you hear it. But when they back it up with those actions, it is a huge reason that they are here right now.
Yeah. I mean, they went out and specifically sought out players who love the process, who love practice, mm-hmm. who love football, who love the idea of being a good teammate. I mean, any of us have worked in crappy work environments, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's people that don't really like doing stuff to help other people at your job out. Like, everyone sitting here now listening to this is like nodding up and down like, yeah, that's right, Dave. I hate that guy. He doesn't care about anybody but himself, right? And it's like, but it's like those things do matter when you talk about people loving coming to work every day. And that's been such a big part of this because, like I said, there, I mean, this thing started in July. You've got to really feel like you can be yourself and love coming to work and not feel like it's a mess and you don't care about the people that you're with. You have to get people in that view it that way and not people that view it as, I'm here playing for myself, I'm here playing for a paycheck, I'm here playing for my next job, I'm here coaching for my next job. All that stuff needs to be out, and they found a way to kind of put that magic together this year. All right, let's keep rolling
to be clear, yeah, Paul was talking in the past tense. There is nothing crappy about the work environment at the Athletic. I wouldn't want anyone recording this and tweeting it out or anything like that. It's been awesome the entire time.
I specifically use the name of our direct boss, so I know that I'm thinking about him.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's go to Jim S. And
hey guys, how's it going?
Doing great. How are you?
You know, with all the concerns that folks have had about Mike Brown in the past, with the Flores lawsuit coming out and talking about giving bonuses for losing games, and Hugh coming out saying that he potentially might have been offered money for losing games, is there any doubt in your mind that Mike Brown has never paid a bonus for losing a game? That is certainly one thing you would never have to be concerned about, that guy.
There is, yes, no doubt. That would 0% chance. The farthest thing from the truth of Mike. Yeah, there's two things that he would not want to do. That would be lose a game and pay any bonuses. Yeah, there is no doubt that would be the case.
So it's or been, get sued.
Yeah, he's been sued. Yes, but not on purpose. Didn't want to.
Yes,
would admit later, accidentally stepped into that one would be what he would say. That's. Did you have another question, Jim, or were you just kind
of? Yeah. So no. Secondly, there was news that came out that the window ended for Auden Tate. Right? Is that more of a statement on maybe his health, or do you think that he just didn't add anything in the receiver room that, you know, maybe one of the other receivers could have added at that point?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely can add something. It's just it's limited. He is that guy, that third down red zone, the guy that's really hard to stop. You throw it up for him. But I don't think it's anything beyond that. They love Auden Tate. Even last year, I remember when his agent came out and said that how upset Auden was, or how upset he was that Auden wasn't used in that week 2 game against Cleveland. And the Bengals had zero issue with that. They said that Auden never expressed any concerns about that they were good. There's no fracture there at all. I do believe this is strictly injury related.
And why? I mean, yes, I would say so. I think that's the case. And also, he was set. I think he was there in case something happened. You've got very well-defined roles there right now, yeah, even with Stanley Morgan injury. And to take somebody that hasn't played in so long and all of a sudden throw him in there, you'd have to have something where T. Higgins got hurt or something like that, and you had to create a package for Auden Tate. And so you keep him in that 21-day window and say, well, we'll activate him if somebody gets hurt and we need him, but otherwise – these roles are kind of set up too, And so I think all of it does play together where they're like, just keep it as an option as long as we can, get him in practice to get a look at him as long as we can. And then if we get all the way to the Super Bowl and we don't need him, then the window will expire. And I think that's kind of the way they looked at it. Let's keep going and just grab a few more here. Let's go to Nick S. and bring Nick S. in. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing well, Paul and Jay. Thanks for doing these. Usually you do these at lunchtime, and I'm at work, and so the fact you're doing it this afternoon, we get a chance to talk a little special teams. And if you know me, I like to talk about kickers.
I know you, Nick. Don't think you can just sneak in here and not drop a Moeller Crusaders class of 99 kicker on me now, and that I wouldn't know exactly who this is. What's going on?
I'm doing well, of course. As you know, I'm very excited about what's happening with the Bengals. So I want to talk a little kicker love, and not Evan McPherson, because he's been getting a lot of it. Let's talk a little bit about Kevin Huber. I know he's getting up there in age, hasn't had the best of years punting-wise. So I guess my question for you is there a chance he's back next year? And if not, who is the punter in the fifth round they're going to draft next year?
that's a good one. Nick, first of all, awesome to hear from you, and you know, cool to see all the reaction videos. I've seen all the reaction videos from you, which get progressively more emotional, I think, as it goes along, and I've appreciated watching that. Let me say this, Nick. I think there's definitely a chance that Huber's back. The Drew Chrisman factor is really the thing here, but you know, the fact that they just kind of let him out off the practice squad back and forth, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of connection with keeping him, you know, it under wraps, makes me think that there's a chance that, you know, they would just go with Huber. But I think more than likely what you'll see is re-signing Huber with the hopes of keeping him around, assuming Kevin still wants to play, which I do assume after this year, unless he's like, screw it, just won the Super Bowl, go out on top with my hometown team. Why? Well, maybe I'll just go out like that. But I would think that they would bring him back, probably have a competition with a guy like Chrisman still, and see how that pans out next year. But I think they've been generally pretty happy with his performance. But yeah, he's getting up in age, and they've been looking into the future with that position for a while.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see a competition in camp next year. And the thing to remember is, you know, punting the ball is only part of that job. The holder part of it is a big piece. I mean, Evan McPherson has had this great, incredible run this year, and that is a three-man unit between Clark Harris, the snapper, and Kevin Huber, the holder, and then McPherson kicking it. And you, unless you have somebody that is maybe not just a little bit better than Kevin Huber in the punting game, maybe you don't want to upset that chemistry in that battery, the snapper, holder, kicker part of it. So it will be worth watching. He is getting up there, and it was just last year that he set a career high in yardage despite his age, but he has fallen off a little this year. So that'll be one of the interesting battles to look for in OTAs and camp next year.
Okay. We're going to do two more questions here, and I see our good friend in Hawaii, Natasha B, is here. So I'm going to save Natasha to close us out. But so first, I'm going to bring Adam P up onto the stage. Adam, how are you doing?
Not much. Thanks for doing this, guys. I can't believe we've gone this long without discussing the offensive line. how do you guys see right guard shaking out, where apparently the plan was to come in with a rotation this past week with Carmen and Adeniji? What did you guys see from their performances, and is there any consideration to Suofilo, considering his strength has always been pass protection, or is that an Auden Tate situation where he's been injured so long that you might as well just ride in with the two guys that they've been going with? Thanks.
It's a good question, Adam. The plan was yes, to rotate, but it was also to then play the hot hand. You know, I think they found Adeniji's struggles to be frustrating, but they found Jackson Carmen's inconsistency to be maddening. And so they felt like they'd seen enough to be like, well, might as well try something. So let's rotate them through, see who looks the best, ride the hot hand towards the end of the game. And they did that. I mean, it ended up being, you know, Carmen. I don't know if they'll do that again. I think both will definitely be ready to go. I don't know if it'll specifically be a rotation thing or if they do move to Carmen. Either way, that person's going to be tasked with trying to block Aaron Donald, and neither of them can do it. So, and most can't, but they particularly can't. So I don't know that it's going to matter who's in there. I think they realize that that spot's just going to be a problem. But at least Carmen gives you big physical. He may not be great. He may be raw. He may be inconsistent. But at least he'll give you some reps where he can maybe stand up slightly physically, whereas Adeniji's just – he was just not big enough and physical enough really to hold up in too many spots.
And the other thing were, if they were willing to do that in an AFC championship game, you could see him doing it in the Super Bowl. And maybe that is the way to go, where it's going to be a long day blocking Aaron Donald. And maybe resting those guys two series on, two series off might make some sense to have them at least a little fresher. I don't, like Paul said, I don't think either of them's going to have much success blocking Aaron Donald. But if you can keep them a little bit fresher through the second half, then maybe we see that again. I don't think either guy proved he deserves to be a full-time starter in the Super Bowl, so it wouldn't surprise me to see the rotation again.
Yeah, we'll see how they play it out. All right, let's wrap this up. You know, it's fitting. We're about to be headed out to beautiful L.A. We can get ourselves in the spirits for that and bring Natasha B. up onto the stage from Hawaii. Natasha, you're our closer. You're our closer. What's going on?
Putting some pressure on me, guys.
I am. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, I missed you. I tell you what, even if it was thunderstorming here, it would be blue skies for us Bengals fans. But I will tell you, it's 80 and sunshiny, but I couldn't be on the beach because you switched the time on me.
I know. It's okay. We'll just imagine it. We'll imagine it in our own heads.
All right. Well, as far as my question, I'm not ready to think about Aaron Donald and the Rams. I'll save that for next week. I just kind of want to bask in the glow of this season. So I was just wondering, personally, for you guys, what has impressed you the most about this season? Was it the coaching, the comebacks, the camaraderie of the players? Like, in an incredible season, what impressed you guys the most?
Great question. I'll say this, Natasha. To me, you mentioned the word comebacks, so I'll piggyback on that a little bit. It's, yes, the comebacks, but it's really been just the resiliency of this team and then the way that they are just never out of any game. And that is most notably down 18 at Arrowhead, which is sort of like, you know, the piece de resistance a little bit of that fact. But they've all year, no matter what, I mean, down 24-0 or whatever against the Chargers, or, you know, it was just over and over again in every spot. When you would think that they're out of it, they never are. And they always find a way. They always seem to be making the big play when the chips are kind of down a little bit. It's been so consistent from day one. And I reference the Pratt fumble against Minnesota all the time, because it's like that was the first time it happened and it never stopped happening, of them finding a way to make a play, to make the comeback, to never feel out of any game, whether they're down two touchdowns against San Francisco and it's 4th and 5 and Joe Burrow's running around like a crazy person and throwing behind Jamar Chase running the other way. Like, those games, it's been unbelievable. I've never seen a team with that kind of ability to never be out of a game, always make the big play to get them back into it or to help put it away. It's just been an unbelievable trait to witness.
Yeah, I'm going to go come back too, but a different way with Joe Burrow. Nobody thought he was going to be done after the ACL, but never expected this kind of year, the first year back. Even when we saw him on OTAs for the first play and he was ahead of schedule, you know, maybe even make this the Joe Burrow comeback and the Jamar Chase arrival, because everybody talked about the chemistry and all that, and you knew it would be there. You knew it would be advantageous, but man, who expected this, really? That kind of rookie year from Jamar Chase, this kind of year from Joe Burrow coming off the injury. There was a lot of pieces that we thought needed to be good and were, but as great as those players are, they went above and beyond my expectations. I would imagine they did a lot of other people's as well. So for me, that's the most impressive.
Yeah, I can't imagine there were too many people saying, yeah, Joe Burrow is going to be right there in the MVP voting, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to be the runaway offensive rookie of the year, just undoubtedly. I mean, could it happen? Sure. But those were some wild pipe dreams. And but here, you know, as we know, Bengals right here now, Super Bowl 56, living those dreams. So we will keep it rolling. Of course, we'll have Hear That Podcast Growling tomorrow. That'll episode will post in the afternoon. We're recording early in the morning. We're going to have a special episode for you. We think you guys are going to like, so make sure you come back and check that out. I know you will. You guys are great. And we'll have more stuff live from LA next week. Our whole podcast team is out there. You know, everybody. So national shows, local shows, Hear That Podcast Ground, all that stuff. There's going to be a ton of content coming from LA next week. So keep it locked. Looking forward to seeing you then. Thanks, everybody, for hopping in the live room. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.